So yeah, calculating the imaginary time correlation function. For our transverse field Ising model. So I've taken the time tau to be positive. So then the correlation function Gij of tau is just equal to expectation value of sigma I z of tau, sigma j z of zero, right? And so as we saw last time, I can write this in the following way, right? So this is 1 over z by definition, so trace of e to minus beta h sigma I z of tau sigma j z of zero. Right, and if I pretend that I know exactly the eigenstates of this Hamiltonian, I can write it this trace formally in terms of the eigenstates. Right, so then this is equal to so I have 1 over z sum over n and m. So this label the different eigenstates of h. So n e to minus beta h n then n sigma z I of tau m and then m sigma z j of zero and again n. Okay. And so this is equal to 1 over z, okay? So here I just replace the Hamiltonian by nth eigenvalue, right? So sum over n e to minus beta e sub n, right? The nth eigenvalue of the Hamiltonian. And then here, so this is imaginary time Heisenberg representation for the spin operator. So I have e to h tau sigma zi e to minus h tau, right? So then what do I get? I get this then. E to tau times En from here, then E to minus tau E sub M from this thing acting on the eigenstate M, right? And then N sigma Z I M. Where now, so this is already a time-independent operator in the Schrödinger representation. M sigma z j n, right? So let me call this difference here. So let me introduce a shorthand notation for that. So let's call e sub m n. So this is going to be this difference, so e sub m minus e sub n. Okay. So then I can write this as 1 over z, right? And then, so sum over n e to minus beta e sub n e to minus tau e m n and then n sigma z I m M sigma z j n. Okay. Okay. So now let me Fourier transform this. So let me now get an expression for the correlation function in the Matsubara frequency space, in the Matsubara frequency representation. Okay. So I get G I j of I omega n, right? So this is just equal to 1 over beta. Without 1 over beta, just the integral from 0 to beta d tau g I j of tau, and then e to I omega n tau. So simply the Fourier transform of this correlation function with respect to the imaginary time. So if I plug in this expression, I will get 1 over z sum over m and n e to minus beta e sub n. And then so the only thing that depends on tau is this exponential. So I get integral from 0 to beta d tau e to I omega n minus e m n times tau, right? And then this couple of matrix elements n sigma z I m sigma z j n, okay? So this integral I can easily calculate, and it gives me what does it give me? It gives me so this is equal to 1 over z sum over m and n e to minus beta e n, right? So then I get 1 over the argument of the exponential, 1 over I omega n minus, right, so just don't confuse this n here with this n, right? So they are different. Okay, it's just a slightly poor notation that I've just noticed, but that should be fine. So minus e m n, and then I get so e to beta I omega n minus e m n and minus 1, right? And then times the matrix element and sigma z I m sigma z j n. Okay, so e to i beta times omega n is equal to 1, right? Because that's precisely how we introduced these Matsubara frequencies, right? From the requirement that the correlation function has to be a periodic function in time with period beta. So it follows that this exponential has to be equal to 1 always, right? So then we get 1 over z sum over m and n. So I get e to minus beta e n, right? Then I have e to minus beta e m n minus 1, right? Then I get 1 over I omega n minus e m n. And then the matrix elements, so n sigma z I m times m sigma z j m, right? Okay. So now let me just rewrite this expression in a compact form. So let me introduce a quantity which I will call the spectral density. And so we will see what its physical meaning is a little bit later. So the spectral density is going to, I'm going to call it rho, with indices I and j, the site indices. And it's a function of frequency. I'll call this frequency capital omega. Okay. And so by definition, this is equal to 2 pi divided by z. So sum over m and n. Okay. So e to minus beta right, so e to minus beta e sub n, then so let me define it with an opposite sign here. So I'll take 1 minus e to minus beta e m n, okay? And then the pair of matrix elements n sigma z I m sigma z j n, okay? And then I will also have a delta function of omega minus e m n, okay? Then I can write my Fourier transformed correlation function in the following way. G I j of omega is equal to, and so again, it's not obvious now, but it will become clear later why I want to write my correlation function in this specific form. Okay, so minus integral from minus infinity to infinity d omega divided by 2 pi rho I j of omega divided by so I omega n minus omega. Okay. So the minus sign here is just because I inverted the sign here, and then so this delta function is gonna pick out omega equals precisely e m n, and I'm gonna get that expression. Okay. Right. So the point is that the dependence on this frequency here. Sorry, this is of course you should have corrected me already. This depends on I omega n, not on capital omega. Okay. So there is this all the dependence on the frequency is in here. It's just this denominator. Okay. And the rest is some function. The spectral density is some function that depends on specifics of the system. That depends on what those eigenstates actually are. Okay. Okay. So now, so the purpose of what I'm doing is the following. So these correlation functions are defined in imaginary time. Okay, but I want to connect them to correlation functions in real time, so that this is something that can be measured, right? So I want to connect this imaginary time correlation function, which I can calculate, to a real time correlation function that can be measured. Okay, so now let's derive a similar general expression for the real time correlation function and compare the two. Okay, so let me consider now real time response. And so here I just have to say a few basic things about a linear response in quantum mechanics. So let me say that my Hamiltonian is equal to H0. And then minus, so H0 is going to be the Hamiltonian of the transverse field Ising model that I've started from. And then I want to add a time-dependent perturbation of the following form. So sum of I, H sub I of t, sigma z I. Okay? So this is going to be a field, right, applied at site I. This is specific time dependence, okay? And I want to calculate response of the system to this applied field, okay? And as we will see, this we will be able to express this this response in terms of a real-time correlation function between, sigma zi of t and sigma zj of t prime. Okay, so let's see how this works. So let me write this as just H0 plus V of t, where V of t is this time-dependent perturbation. Okay. Okay, so in principle, I can find everything about the system from solving the Schrödinger equation, right? So I get I d dt psi is equal to h psi. So if I could solve that, I could find everything about the system. So let me now rewrite this Schrödinger equation in a slightly different way. So let me introduce what's called interaction representation. Okay, for the operators, this is kind of, as we'll see, it's kind of an intermediate between Schrödinger representation and Heisenberg representation. Okay, so I want to say that my sigma z i's, right? So here, the way it's written is that sigma z i, so the operators here are in the Schrödinger representation, so they are time independent, right? But the wave function depends on time, and its evolution is determined by the full Hamiltonian, which includes this perturbation. Now I want to define this representation. So sigma zi of t is equal to e to I h0 t sigma zi e to minus I h0 t. Okay, so the Heisenberg representation would involve the full Hamiltonian here, right? H0 plus the perturbation, but I want to include here only H0. So what it does, you can easily check that it changes the Schrödinger equation in the following way. So now I d dt of psi. So now evolution of the wave functions is only determined by the perturbation here, okay? So this eliminates the part of the time dependence of the wave functions that comes from H0, right? If I had a full H here, then I would eliminate the time dependence from the wave function completely. All the time dependence would come into the operators. So this is kind of a partial elimination, okay? So I have I d dt psi equals v of t psi, okay? And so let me assume that this field here that perturbs my system was off when time was equal to minus infinity. Right? So I assume that hi of t equals minus infinity is zero. So then I can formally write the solution of this equation in the following way. So I have psi of t equals psi zero, and psi zero is whatever the wave function was at time equals minus infinity when the perturbation was turned off, right? And then minus, so integral from minus infinity to t dt prime, right? So dt prime psi of t prime, and dt prime psi of t prime is minus I times this thing, so I get psi zero plus I integral from minus infinity to t dt prime. There is a plus sign here, of course, and a minus sign here. Okay. So v of t prime times psi of t prime. Okay. So this is an equation now that psi, that the wave function satisfies, right? And I can solve this equation iteratively if I assume that this field is small. Okay. So what I'm interested in is response to a small field. Okay. And in particular, I'm interested in response to linear order, to leading order in this field. Okay. So to linear order in HI, and so this is called for this reason linear response. And so, you know, we typically, at least in condensed matter, we typically are concerned with linear response, right? So we, let's say we calculate the current in response to an electric field, right? And current is equal to conductivity times the electric field, which is the conductivity independent of the electric field. I mean, that's in principle only true to linear order in the field, if the field is small. In principle, if you apply a very large field, the conductivity itself is going to depend on the electric field, but typically we are interested in kind of mild perturbations on the system, okay? Okay, so then to linear order in the field, I can simply plug in psi zero in here, right? So this is just equal to approximately psi zero minus I integral from minus infinity to t dt prime v of t prime times psi zero. Okay, so let me just write it here that psi zero is by definition psi of t equals minus infinity, where the field was turned off completely. Okay. Okay, so now what I want to calculate with this is, so what we are interested in the response again. So I want to calculate the change in the expectation value of sigma z at some site I, right, that happens due to this field. Okay? So so I want to calculate, call it delta of the expectation value of sigma zi of t, okay? So by definition, this is going to be the difference. So psi of t, sigma zi, psi of t, right? The expectation value of sigma z with respect to the the full wave function psi of t, right? Relative to the expectation value of sigma z at t equals minus infinity when that field was turned off. Okay, minus psi zero sigma z I psi zero, right? So this is precisely what response means, right? I apply a field and I want to see how the expectation value of sigma z changes. Okay, so let's just calculate this explicitly using this this solution that we found to linear order in H. So this is equal to, okay, so I get psi zero, so plus I integral from minus infinity to t dt prime. Right, so it's like that. So psi zero and then integral from minus infinity to t dt prime v of t prime, right? And then, okay, then I have sigma zi. And this is, okay, so this is, of course, sigma zi of t, my sigma z in the Heisenberg representation. So let me include this t dependence in here. So sigma zi of t, right? And then I have the same thing on the left, on the right, sorry, so psi zero minus I integral from minus infinity to t dt prime v of t prime psi zero, right? And then minus psi zero sigma zi of t psi zero, okay? Okay, so what do we get? We get, so this term cancels this one, psi zero sigma zi of t psi zero, okay? Then what we have left is the following. So I get I, right, integral from minus infinity to t dt prime psi zero, and then I get two terms, right? I get v of t prime sigma z I of t, right? And then minus sigma z I of t v of t prime psi zero, right? And so this is nothing but the commutator, right, of sigma z and v. And let me explicitly now substitute this form for v of t. So this is equal to I times integral from minus infinity to t dt prime. So psi zero, then I have, so v of t prime is going to be minus, so on the commutator of minus sum over j h sub j of t sigma z j of t, and then sigma z I of t. And we are calculating the expectation value of this commutator, of t prime, in the state psi zero. So then I get so I can write this in the following way as plus I integral from minus infinity to t dt prime, right? And then sum over j. So expectation value of the commutator, sigma z I of t, sigma z j of t prime, and times h sub j of t prime, okay? Okay, so now let me introduce a what's called a retarded response function. Which I will call chi ij of t minus t prime, okay? And so this is going to be I theta of t minus t prime, where theta is the theta function, right? So it's 1 when its argument is positive and 0 when its argument is negative. When its argument is negative, and then times this commutator. And so let me write this average in a general way, without reference to psi zero now. So just expectation value of sigma zi of t, sigma zj of t prime. Okay. So then I can write, my response in terms of this function, right? So I can say that delta average of sigma zi of t is equal to integral from minus infinity to infinity dt prime, and then sum over j chi ij of t minus t prime, h sub j of t prime, right? So the reason I needed this theta function here, right, is so that I can write this integral as integral from minus infinity to infinity, right? And the theta function here enforces causality, right? It forces the time t to be always later than t prime, right? The cause has to be earlier than the effect, and this is why it's called the retarded response function, right? So the cause happens later, happens after, the effect happens after the cause, right? Okay, and this average, so I've derived this response function, explicitly at zero temperature, right? I assume that I can just describe my function describe my system in terms of a wave function, but I can just generalize this now to finite temperatures, right? So at finite temperature, this average just means the statistical mechanical average, right? So at finite temperature, this This average here just means 1 over z sum over n. So e to minus beta e n, and then n, whatever this operator is here, n, okay? So I have not shown that this is true explicitly, but it's natural to think that if that expression is true at zero temperature, there is no reason it should not be true at finite temperature as well. Okay, if I just replace the simple quantum mechanical average by statistical mechanical average. Okay. Okay, so what I want to do now is relate. So this response function is something that can be measured, right? So I can actually apply, at least think of applying this kind of position-dependent field, right, and measure the response of the spins to this field. Okay, so at least theoretically, this response function is can be measured. Okay, and I want to relate it again to something that we can calculate, which is the imaginary time response function. Okay, and it turns out there is a very direct relation between them. Okay, but so to see that, what I want to do is derive a similar general expression for chi as we have done for the imaginary time correlation function. Okay, so let's go here. Okay, so let's write out this expression for chi ij explicitly again in terms of the eigenstates of my Hamiltonian, and so the Hamiltonian here of course is h0, right? So we are calculating the response here, but this chi ij only depends on the eigenstates of h0, right? So all the dependence on h is in here to linear order in h. So I get chi ij of t minus t prime. So this is I theta of t minus t prime. And so I have 1 over z sum over n e minus beta e sub n. So these are the eigenstates of h0 again. So I have m sigma zi of t sigma zj of t prime and sum over j here. So sum over j. There is no sum over j, sorry. Okay, times n, right? And so let's again, in the usual way, insert resolutions of identity between sigma zi and sigma zj. So this is equal to I theta of t minus t prime 1 over z. So I'll have sum over n and m e to minus beta e sub n. And so then I have n, write it like this. So n sigma zi of t m, right? M sigma zj of t prime n, and then minus, so minus n sigma z j of t prime m sigma z I of t n, right? Actually, sorry, let me just set this this t prime here to zero, right? So obviously things should be translation invariant in time as well, so I can just set this t prime to zero. Okay, so this is zero. This is zero. This is zero, okay. Okay, and so now I get, so I theta of t, 1 over z, sum over n and m, right? So e to minus beta e sub n, and so now I'm using the fact that this is in the Heisenberg representation, so I get so e to I e n t e to minus I e m t, right? N sigma z I m sigma z j n, right? And then minus so e to minus I e n t e to I e m t, right? And then n sigma z j m sigma z I n, okay? So again, I will use this notation that e sub m minus e sub n is equal to e m n, right? So then this is equal to I theta of t, 1 over z, so sum over n and m, e to minus beta e n, right? I get e to minus I e m n times t, so n sigma z I m sigma z j n, and then minus e to plus I e m n t. So n sigma z j m sigma z I n, okay? And now, so let's again Fourier transform that, right? So we've so the time dependence now is only contained in these exponentials and in the theta function. So at this point, we can explicitly Fourier transform. Okay, so I want to calculate chi ij of omega, okay, which is integral from minus infinity to infinity dt chi ij of t, right, e to plus I omega t, okay? Okay, so let's just talk about these integrals a little bit. They're slightly less trivial than in the imaginary time case. Okay, so the type of the integrals I will have to calculate is the following. So I have, let's say, an integral from minus infinity to infinity dt, right? Theta of t, then, so let's take this one, so e to I e m n times t, sorry, e m n times t, and then e to I omega t. Okay, so this theta restricts the integral to be from 0 to infinity, right? So this is integral from 0 to infinity dt e to I omega plus e m n times t, right? And so what is this equal to? This is equal to 1 over I omega plus I e m n, right? Sorry, so let's, of course, so if you do it in a brute force way like this, it's not going to converge. So let me calculate this integral in the following, let me use the following trick. Let me add here a tiny real part, okay, so that it cuts off this integral at infinity and then send the real part to zero in the end, okay? So let me calculate this as limit, and I will call this tiny real part eta of eta going to zero from above. Okay, so eta is a tiny positive real number, and then I will add this eta in here, so plus I eta times t. So then if eta is positive, you see that this integral, that the integrand vanishes exponentially for any finite eta at infinity, right? And so this makes this integral converge. So then I get 1 over I omega plus E M N plus I eta, right? And then I get, I guess, 0, right, minus so minus 1, okay? So this is equal to I omega plus E M N plus I eta, right? Right? Assuming that the limit So let me just take this limit implicitly. So I will assume that eta is an infinitesimally small but positive real number, okay? So eta here is just equal to 0 plus, okay? Okay, so now, so let's write out an explicit expression for chi ij of omega. So chi ij of omega is then equal to okay, so I can write it like this, minus 1 over z. Okay, so sum over n and m. Okay, so I'll write it like this, e to minus beta e sub n. And then I have two terms. So I'll get n sigma zi m sigma zj n divided by so omega plus e n m plus I eta, right? So this comes from here, and I just used the fact that e n m is equal to minus e m n, and then minus, and in here let me just rename. Sorry. I want to keep it for now as it is. So I have n sigma z j m sigma z I n, and then I get omega, so minus e n m plus I eta. Okay. And now let me define something that's going to be very closely related to the spectral density, which I've introduced before. But in this context, it's called dynamic structure factor. Okay, so it's called Sij of omega. Okay, and it's equal to 2 pi divided by z. So again, sum over n and m, e to minus beta e n, and then n sigma z I m sigma z j n times delta function of omega minus e m n, okay? And so let me rewrite this in a compact now form using the dynamic structure factor. Oops. Okay, first of all, let's actually compare the expression for the dynamic structure factor and the expression for the spectral density over there. Okay, so if you just look at them, you will see that Sij, the relation is very simple. So Sij of omega is equal to rho ij of omega divided by 1 minus e to minus beta omega. Okay. Is this clear? So that this factor, right, this denominator here just eliminates that 1 minus e to minus beta emn that's present over there and not present in the structure factor, okay? Okay, so let's proceed with chi ij of omega. Now, so chi ij of omega, in terms of the structure factor, I can write it in the following way. As minus integral from minus infinity to infinity d omega prime divided by 2 pi. And then I have Sij of omega prime divided by omega minus omega prime plus I eta. And then minus Sji of omega prime divided by omega prime plus I eta, right? And now, let me, in the second integral, let me change my integration variable from omega prime to minus omega prime, right? I can easily do that because the limits are from minus to plus infinity. So this is equal to integral from minus to plus infinity d omega prime divided by 2 pi. So I get Sij of omega prime minus Sji of minus omega prime. And then I have a common denominator for the both for both terms, omega minus omega prime plus I eta, right? And then, so if I just look at, again, at the definition of sigma ij of omega, it's easy to see that sigma ij of omega, okay, is equal to e to beta omega times sigma ji of minus omega, okay? Right? So then, what do I have? I have chi ij of omega is equal to minus, did I forget a minus sign? I forgot a minus sign in here, okay? Okay, so it's minus integral from minus infinity to infinity d omega prime divided by 2 pi. So I get Sij of omega prime times 1 minus e to minus beta omega prime, right? And then 1 over omega minus omega prime plus I eta, and this is nothing but the structure factor, right? By the spectral density, right? So this is equal to then minus integral from minus infinity to infinity, so d omega prime divided by 2 pi rho ij of omega prime divided by omega minus omega prime plus I eta. Okay. So now let's compare then this with the expression for the Fourier transform of the correlation function, of the imaginary time correlation function. So for that we had Gij of I omega n, right? So this was equal to minus, again, integral from minus infinity to infinity, d omega prime divided by 2 pi, rho ij of omega prime, and then I had I omega n minus omega prime, right? Okay, so now it's clear how to go from here, and again, so this is the thing that we can calculate to here, which is what we can measure, right? So it's clear that if I take Gij, right, and analytically continue it from imaginary Matsubara frequencies to real frequencies, and the way I do this is I replace I omega n by omega plus I eta. Okay, so this I eta is important. And this gives me chi ij of omega. Okay. So yeah, so the real time response function is obtained from imaginary time correlation function by this analytical continuation. Okay, so now let's use that to actually calculate this response function in our model. Okay, for the transverse field Ising model. So let's start here. Okay, so now let's see how we can explicitly calculate Gij of tau, right? So I have Gij of tau equals, and I'll assume again that tau is positive, sigma z I of tau, sigma z j of zero, okay? And let me assume, since this function is periodic in tau with period beta, I can just take this tau to be between zero and beta, right? Okay, so explicitly this is equal to one over z, right? Trace again of e to minus beta h sigma z I of tau sigma z j of zero, which is equal to 1 over z trace of e to minus beta h e to tau h, right, sigma z I e to minus tau h sigma z j, okay? So this is equal to 1 over z trace of e to minus beta minus tau times h sigma z I e to minus tau times h sigma z j, okay? So now, if I repeat, so I'm not going to repeat it explicitly, but if I repeat the same thing that we did before, so do the Trotter decomposition of all of those exponentials, right? So it's easy to see that this is equal to, so basically what those factors do, so e to minus beta minus tau h and e to minus tau h, in the Trotter decomposition, what they do is they place this sigma z I exactly at the tauth slice of the Trotter decomposition, right? Or sorry, exactly at the right. So exactly at the tauth slice of the Trotter decomposition, while this is placed at the zeroth slice of the Trotter decomposition. Okay. So this is why it's important for this to be time ordered. Okay. So if you don't quite understand what I mean, just explicitly, you know, perform the Trotter decomposition on this thing. Okay. So then this is equivalent to calculating the correlation function of the spins sigma z I of tau and sigma z j of zero in our d plus one dimensional classical Ising model. Okay. So this is equal to sum over sigma z of tau m, let's say down to sum over sigma z of tau of zero, of tau one, sorry. Okay. And then I have sigma z I of tau, sigma z j of 0 and e to minus s of sigma z. Okay. And now, so I can just calculate this correlation function using our continuum form for the action, for s of sigma. Okay, so let's use so let's take S of phi as so integral from 0 to beta d tau integral d dx, so 1 half d tau phi squared plus 1 half grad phi squared plus r over 2 phi squared plus u over 4 factorial phi to the fourth. Okay. So to evaluate this correlation function, all I have to do is replace those sigmas by phis, right? And so instead of sum, I'm going to have the functional integral over phi, right? So that's the correspondence that we have established before. Okay, so I have Gij of tau is just equal to expectation value of phi I of tau phi j of 0. Okay, oh, sorry, I want to make it continuum. So g, sorry, of, let's say, x and tau is going to be equal to expectation value of phi of x and tau phi of 0 and 0. Okay. Okay, so let me now, so let's evaluate this correlation function explicitly when the temperature is far above the critical temperature, right? So let's evaluate this when T is much greater than TC, okay? So if T is much greater than TC, this R coefficient is definitely positive, okay? And then to the first approximation, I can just ignore this phi to the fourth. Right? Because the integral over phi will converge anyway. Okay, so it follows that r is positive, so we can ignore phi to the fourth term, right? So then my s of phi becomes, so if I rewrite this in Fourier space, my s of phi is going to be 1 over V times beta, right? So V times beta is the total volume of the system in the D plus one dimensional space time. Sum over K, right? So K are the spatial wave vectors, right? And the analog of those wave vectors for the time dimension is the Matsubara frequencies. So sum over K and I omega N. Sorry, just omega N. And then, so the Fourier transform of this is just 1 half, so k squared plus omega n squared plus r times phi of k and omega n modulus squared, right? And so now I can easily evaluate this correlation function. So in the usual way, so the correlation function in Fourier space, so g of k and omega n, let me keep the I here, I omega n, right? So this is just equal to inverse of the coefficient of phi of k and omega n squared, right? So this is equal to, so 1 over k squared plus omega n squared plus r, okay? Okay, and now, so given this, I can analytically continue it and get the response function in real time, right? Okay, so chi of k and omega is equal to g of k with I omega n replaced by omega plus I eta, right? And so this is equal to 1 over k squared plus r, and then here I get minus omega plus I eta squared, right? Because I'm supposed to replace I omega n by omega plus I eta. So this I can write in the following way as 1 over, let's say, square root of k squared plus r minus omega minus I eta, and then square root of k squared plus r plus omega plus I eta, right? And so let me now specifically evaluate the imaginary part of this response function, okay? So the imaginary part of the response function is, in fact, exactly what can be directly measured, okay? So this, I'll talk about this in just a second. Okay, and so to evaluate this imaginary part, I want to know what is the imaginary part of this kind of thing. So what is the imaginary part of 1 over, let's say, some x plus I eta, right? So this is imaginary part of x of x minus I eta, right, divided by x squared plus eta squared. So this is minus eta divided by x squared plus eta squared. And this, so you remember that eta is infinitesimal positive real number. This is just a representation for a delta function, right? You can easily check that. Well, you can see that this is a delta function because, so if x is 0, then this is 1 over eta. So it diverges as I take eta to 0, right? While if x is not 0, I can always neglect this this eta here, and I get 0, right? And then if you integrate this from minus infinity to infinity, this is going to give you pi, in fact. Okay, so this is equal to minus pi times Dirac delta function of x. Okay, so then my imaginary part of chi is just equal to of chi and omega is equal to just the sum of two delta functions that come from the two terms here. So I get pi over 2 root r plus k squared, and then I get delta function of omega minus r plus k squared minus delta function of omega plus r plus k squared, okay? Right? Okay, so now if I plot this this response function, I get the following. So let's restrict ourselves to positive frequencies, right? So this is the imaginary part of chi, and this is the frequency, right? So its frequency dependence would consist of a delta function peak at omega equals root of r plus k squared. Right? Now, so what does this look like? Omega equals r plus k squared. Okay? This actually looks like the energy momentum relation of a relativistic particle with a mass that's equal to mass squared equal to r, right? So this is a dispersion of a relativistic particle of mass m equals root r, right? And the speed of light set to 1, okay? So what does this mean, right? So what the imaginary part of chi measures is basically how the system absorbs the energy of external perturbation, okay? So the external perturbation here, as you remember, is this site and time-dependent magnetic field, right? I can Fourier transform the field as well, right? And I can measure the response of the system, so how the system absorbs the energy of this external perturbation as a function of the frequency of the perturbation and as a function of momentum, right? And what I would measure is this, that the system does not absorb anything unless the frequency is equal to precisely root of r plus k squared, right? What this means is that there are some excitations in the system that have this kind of dispersion relation, okay? This kind of relation between their energy. Remember that I've set h bar to 1, right? So the frequency here is the same as energy. So there are excitations in the system which have exactly this relation between their energy and the momentum. And so those excitations can absorb the energy provided by this external field. Okay? So there are excitations, again, in this transverse field Ising model that actually behave like relativistic particles. Okay? So that's a pretty amazing result, actually, right? So you can have relativistic particles emerging in just a lattice model of spins. Okay. Okay. So what are these particles, right? So this correlation function, right? So we've calculated that at high temperatures, and the high temperatures. You remember this is our D plus one dimensional classical model. The temperature in that model is not the real temperature. We are at zero temperature. The temperature here is the transverse field in the D dimensional transverse field model, right? So what this correlation function corresponds to is the regime where H over J is large, right? So this is the this is what the correlation function looks like. Function when h over j is much greater than 1, right? So you remember that the ground state when h over j is infinite is just all spins polarized in the x direction, right? So the ground state wave function at infinite h is just, let me draw it like this, just all spins polarized in the x direction, right? And so then these excitations, which behave like relativistic particles, are simply flipped spins, okay? So if I take this state, which is completely polarized in the x direction, so this would be like my vacuum, okay? And then if I flip a spin, flip one of the spins here, and let this flipped spin propagate, the flipped spin is going to propagate like a relativistic particle, okay? So this relativistic, quote unquote, excitations are flipped spins. Okay, so if we did the same calculation for t much less than tc, meaning in this language h much less than j, right, you would actually find a very similar thing. So in this case, to calculate the correlation function, we would have to expand around the saddle point to quadratic order and then evaluate the correlation function. You would get exactly the same result. So we would have excitations which behave like relativistic particles. In this case, those would be flipped spins with respect to the z direction, right? So the ground state at large j is all spins polarized in either plus z or minus z direction. So if I pick one of them, let's say spins polarized in the plus z direction, then excitations would be spins which are flipped to minus z direction. And those propagate in exactly the same way as relativistic particles, okay? Okay, now finally, we have 5 minutes left. Let's do this calculation exactly at the critical point, okay? And see what happens there. Yep. Right. Sorry, not sure what you mean. So, so if I take this now and raise the temperature, the real temperature.
I mean, we're in the same phase as the phase where h equals zero and t is
constant. Right, but so in this case, you know, so if h equals zero, right, then I have just a classicalizing model. In this case, there is no notion of, you know, propagating particles. So for that, I really need quantum mechanics. In that case, so a classical model is just described in terms of different configurations of those spins. Everything is static. I just have many possible configurations which are weighted by with the corresponding Boltzmann weight, but everything is time independent. Right. So if I still have a quantum Ising model and. So start from zero temperature and simply increase the real T here, right? Well, what I would see is more or less the same thing, except probably this peak is going to acquire a finite width, which is of the order of temperature.
And what would happen if T
was beyond the phase transition? Well,
Uh,
Yeah, let's, you know, I only have, because it will take me a long time to gather my thoughts. Let's just do this last calculation. Okay, so let's evaluate this exactly at the critical point. So at the critical point, I know that, so at the critical point, I know that the correlation function, so g of x in real space has to have the following form. So g of x is going to be proportional to 1 over x to capital D, where capital D is small d plus 1, so this is a total space-time dimension, d minus 2 plus eta, where eta is not that infinitesimal positive integer, but the anomalous dimension. Okay, so don't confuse them. And so this is 1 over x, so I guess to d, d minus small d minus 1 plus eta, right? Okay, so we want to Fourier transform this we want to Fourier transform that first. So I get g of k, right? And so this k, just for simplicity, is going to be the d plus 1 dimensional wave vector. So its space components are the wave vectors, while the time component is the omega n, okay? So I get integral d capital dx, okay? So that includes that x includes both spatial and temporal coordinates, e to minus I k dot x g of x, right? And so here, if I just count dimensions, right? So this behaves as 1 over x to d minus 1 plus eta, while the only other thing that has dimensions is this thing, right? So therefore, this Fourier transform has to have the following form as 1 over k to 2 minus eta, right? Because this x to the d here, right, is just canceled by this d dx, right? And so what I have remaining is x to minus 2 plus eta, or k to 2 minus eta, right? So you can figure this out just by counting dimensions. Okay, so this means that if I explicitly now write this as g of k and I omega n, so it has to be proportional to 1 over, so k squared plus omega n squared to 2 minus eta over 2, right? And then, so chi of k and omega will be proportional to 1 over k squared minus omega squared. And here I can actually forget about I eta. It's not important. To 2 minus eta over 2. Okay. So then its imaginary part has a following form, so imaginary part of chi of k and omega is going to be equal to theta of omega minus k, right? So this is purely real if omega is less than k, and it only has imaginary part when omega is greater than k. And then I have, so the imaginary part of e to minus I pi. So 2 minus eta over 2, okay, whatever that is, it doesn't matter. And then omega squared minus k squared times 2 to minus eta divided by 2. So and the point here is that this does not have the form of a delta function peak at a specific omega, omega and k, right? What this looks like, so imaginary part of chi and omega, so it's 0 exactly when k is less than omega, right? And then at k, I get some kind of a broad peak, right? That's given basically by this function, 1 over omega squared minus k squared times this power, taken to this power, right? So what this means is that there are no, in this case, at the critical point, there are no quasi-particles anymore. The quasi-particles vanish, right? I don't have something that has a specific, I don't have excitations that have a specific relation between omega and k, right? So here, I get kind of a broad continuum of excitations, right? So this means that quasi-particles disappear at the critical point, and you know, so this is just one more thing, and I'll finish. So this is kind of a general feature of quantum phase transitions. That so typically, if you look at the phases away from the transition, there is always a description of excitations in those phases in terms of some kind of particles, which are roughly non-interacting, okay? So in this case, these are particles which have this relativistic form, relativistic energy-momentum relation, right? And so again, so it's always the case. Like let's say if you take a magnet, right? Then let's even take a simpler example. If you take an insulating solid, right? So the quasi-particles in this case are phonons, right? And you can roughly describe an insulating solid in terms of an ideal gas of non-interacting phonons. Okay, so that determines all the thermodynamic properties of an insulating solid, right? If it's not insulating, you have to also include electrons. But at the critical point, such simple quasi-particle description always disappears. So as you approach the critical point, quasi-particles start to interact stronger and stronger, and eventually, right at the critical point, they interact so strongly that that it doesn't make sense anymore to speak of quasi-particles. Okay, so this is why phase transitions are complicated and interesting. Okay, so that's it. That's all I wanted to say. So thank you.